DC Stories Podcast presents.
That's right. Welcome back. I'm Dave. I'm joined today again by my good friend Justin as we take another look beyond the stream. We are going to be talking about episode 4 of Archive 81 on Netflix. Of course, we would love to hear your thoughts. I hope you guys are enjoying the series and watching along and having a good time with it. So don't be shy. Reach out. If you're not sure how to do that, just visit AICstories.com. It's the hub for the entire AIC Stories universe, including everything from show notes on the episodes to book and film reviews, links on where to listen, where to find me on social media, and even links to support AIC Stories financially if you so choose. Now, AICstories.com, I plug it and promote it all the time. It really is kind of just the central hub for everything we do here, so be sure to check back often. Let's get right to today's episode. The entry for today into the audio vault is Beyond the Stream number 5, and it's episode 4 of Archive 81. Let's go join Justin and I as we have a great conversation and see what this episode had in store for us. All right, so we are back. It's time to look at episode 4 called The Spirit Receivers. Joining me, as always, is my good friend Justin. This was quite an episode.
It was.
And I know you watched it literally just minutes ago. You finished it up before we recorded. And
yeah.
Exciting because I know it's super fresh on your mind still. I watched it late last night. And was dying to talk about it.
Yeah, I was going to watch it last night, and then I just got distracted and never did. And I was like, well, I guess I'll watch it right before we record, so it's going to be fresh.
There we go. Well, for those of you watching along, this, like I said, episode 4, Spirit Receivers, the brief synopsis before we get into the discussion here is, in the woods, Dan encounters the unexpected. In the tapes, Melody learns about the cult and makes contact during a shocking seance. That's putting it mildly.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, why don't we get right to it? What do you have? Your first thought. This is so fresh for you, so I'm curious to see. What's the first thought you want to tackle here?
Well, man, so I'm glad it's fresh because, like, I honestly stopped, like, writing things down. When they got to that seance scene,
yeah,
I didn't have any notes once that started.
Right.
So I'm glad it's still fresh. But
right.
We could probably talk about that in a few minutes. The first thing that I noted, because mm-hmm. I noticed it in the last episode, mm-hmm. and then I thought about it, but I was like, I'm going to wait and see if it keeps happening.
Yeah.
So when Dan and Melody like are interacting with each other,
yes,
there's like I don't know if you noticed it, but there's actually uh-huh. a visual effect that happens. It's like a sparkle.
Yeah, these kind of floaty blue and purplish kind of color floaty effects that are happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't notice it if it was there before the last episode, episode 3, but I noticed it again in this one. And I was like, is that?
I'm not positive, but I think it was there, but I think it was subtle and I think it's getting stronger.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too, especially when they were talking throughout this episode. Cause there was a lot of interaction between them in this one.
Right.
And it seemed like as the episode went on there, it was, like, it's not really distracting, but once you notice mm-hmm. it's like, oh,
they're in
that's happening.
Yeah. It's like they're in a different space outside of either one of their own times.
Yeah.
That I had that as a note. I wasn't sure if I was going to go with it off the top, but the blue floaty effects during flashback. That was my note. Super, super detailed notes you can tell I take here as I'm watching this.
Mine was things get sparkly when Dan and Melody interact. So
when you think of this series and how dark it is, people look at notes like that, that we both just shared, they think, what are we watching here? Twilight or something?
There's not any vampires yet, as far as I know.
Right, right. Well, my first takeaway, I guess, I don't know what it was. It's kind of a part humorous and part serious thought. And that was right off the bat, he's out in the woods and he starts talking to Melody. And then the woman in the red coat finds him hours and hours later out there. Mm-hmm. And my note was basically, first off, Dan is going to freeze to death if he keeps blinking out of time like that in the woods. But the real thought behind it is, it's interesting how whenever he is speaking with Melody and they're having their connections, that whole scenario, like he's losing time and she's seeing it all in her dreams. And so it's really interesting how it's kind of playing where he's physically just trapped in a space and staring off apparently and not realizing, you know, so much time is passing. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder more about like what's happening and what we think is his dreams. Like
right.
In, at the end of the last episode, when Cassandra reached through and grabbed him, like, and
yes.
Startled awake. Like,
mm-hmm.
So that obviously wasn't the same as when he's interacting with Melody.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
And Cassandra, that's the name I was looking for. I couldn't remember it for some reason. That's the creepy red haired lady.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Perfect.
Creepy yeah. old gal, as I
yeah.
put.
yeah. Notes. Yeah. That's what I've got. Creepy red haired lady. All right. What do you have next from this?
Well, my next note was like about her. Like I wrote creepy old gal collects creepy old art, but yeah. I guess that I didn't connect at the time that she wasn't collecting it. She was keeping it because it
yeah.
was her quote unquote sisters. I
right.
guess there's a question about what that relationship is.
Right.
There. But she and this cult, I think, absolutely know what's going on with Melody's mom. Like 100%. Like
I think so too.
Once, especially once her, like when Melody and Annabelle go to her apartment before the seance. Like
right.
you can tell just how she acts then. Like she is not
right.
subtle at all about like there's no poker face there.
Yeah.
And then once they get to the dinner / seance, like
right.
just the looks between her and Samuel and her and the opera lady that I can't remember her name.
Yeah. Starts with a T. It's a weird name. Tamara. Yeah.
Tamara, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, they know for sure what's happening. And I think
right.
I'm wondering if Cassandra wasn't pushing to talk to her Melody's mom in the seance
mm-hmm.
so that they could learn more also.
Yeah. Right. And I too had that note, red haired lady granting the interview with Melody, showing them around her museum of creepy crap. I used a swear word, but, and then, you know, including the cabinet from the sex cult and, odd nude painting of herself.
yeah.
Her apartment is like some bizarre, like museum piece. You know, there's all this weird items from the occult, you know, and, you know, the one that stood out to me was that really disturbing looking bowl of some sort that was like a pottery bowl, but it had human teeth inlaid around the edges.
Yeah.
And we, yeah, and I'm wondering if that bowl is going to be important as well as Melody's ring, but that bowl shows up in the intro because we see kind of this fake documentary going on and they talk about that. Then it shows up when they're looking around her apartment, and then Danny finds it later when he, you know, spoiler, breaks into the storage room, and he finds that bowl all kind of half melted and everything in the collection
yeah.
of stuff there. So I'm wondering if there's any significance to that, but who knows? So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of tying into my second one. And I almost think that we almost should tackle the seance part at the end as kind of its own thing, if you want. Because
sure.
there was, I had a few notes from that myself. But the couple, well, there's two very minor points that I thought were kind of cool. Number one was a very small detail where they mentioned the circle, which was that old film he was restoring in the very first episode where the guy cuts the other woman's throat. And that shows up in this episode again. We don't see it, but it's referenced. And that is the film that they're asking about at the dinner party a bunch. And I thought that was cool. And then I really started to wonder if there's something special going on with Melody's ring, because, you know, she gave it to her as an infant before she brought her to the church and all of that. And then Danny finds it later, or Dan, I should say. I'm wondering if there's some significance to that ring. Is it some sort of, you know, kind of like that pendant that Cassandra had
mm-hmm.
that Melody was looking at, and then her face like flickered and changed in it when she was staring into it, which I thought that shot was very, very cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm wondering if there's something with her ring that's going to hold a key to something here.
I'm wondering because, like, in the past, in Melody's timeline, she has the ring.
Yep.
And now, in Dan's time, he finds the ring. And in the seance, it's not until Beatrice grabs the ring that
you're right.
Stuff starts going sideways.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's not some sort of like conduit.
Right. That's connecting them somehow. Yeah,
because it's in Dan's possession now, and like she sees that link between them. Even she doesn't know what it is, but she sees it.
Well, and here's something that may fall a little bit into the predictions territory. I guess I didn't really have one, but I can hit that right now. I was thinking about this when I saw it. She has the ring in her timeline. Dan finds it later in his timeline, and they're using that to assume that she's dead because it's with the belongings found at the Visser.
Mm-hmm.
However, in that seance scene, which we'll talk about in a minute, when that whole crazy ending happens, I think, was it Beatrice? Yeah. I think the lady running the seance, I think she still had that ring in her hand maybe, or in her lap or something. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Melody got that ring back yet, which might leave open that Melody might be alive.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced she's dead.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think about that until you just said it with the ring.
I
was going on the assumption that Melody would have taken it back. But
right.
You're right, I guess. I don't know. We don't know.
Like, yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So what else, before we get into the seance thing, what else did you have from...
Well, I think my last one will actually kind of tie into the seance. And
okay.
I think you mentioned the circle, like the one what he was restoring.
Yep.
You said like a minor detail. I don't think it's a minor detail.
Well, yeah, it might not be. Yeah.
Because I think, and I didn't put it in my notes for episode one, but I'm pretty sure when we were talking in episode one, I mentioned that I thought it was going to come back.
Yep.
Something about that show was going to come back.
Yeah, I remember. And, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, like, so I think. Because Cassandra seemed intent on wanting to know what this film was that inspired Crest, the African Walter or whatever, the filmmaker that made the circle.
Right.
So I think that the snuff film that he saw that inspired the circle, I think he was trying to recreate it.
Yeah.
And created the circle. And that's some weird ritual now that these people are trying to do.
Right.
With the looks they were giving each other and like all that, like, nonverbal communication that was going on during that seance. Like,
and Cassandra was very much like when was it Crest? Is that the name? Crest, whatever it was. The daughter like that. That's at the dinner party. She's like an actress or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she communicates with the father through the seance, and Cassandra's pushing her, like, ask him about the film. And she's leaning in, and as things start going bad for her, and you know, he's telling her, you know, stay away, whatever. And even then, Cassandra's still pushing, like, oh, see if he knows more about the film, or did they ever find it, and things like that. So, maybe it's not a small detail, I guess. Yeah, that's poor word placement or choice on my part, but definitely thought it was neat that in the first episode, it seems like a kind of small, like, oh, he's just restoring these old films. This is creepy, like a set piece, and now it's showing up and maybe a much bigger part of the story. Yeah. So,
and I'd have to go back and look again, because I didn't pay that much attention in the first episode, but I think I remember them showing when he's restoring that film a shot of like all the people huddled around like in the circle or whatever, and I want to say there was a symbol on the floor.
Oh yeah.
And I think, and it could just be my brain assuming and trying to make the connection that isn't actually there,
right,
that it's that same symbol that's on that cabinet.
Yeah.
Like,
it probably is. But, I guess I'd have to look back too, but that makes sense. Yeah.
Also, that cabinet, that statue changed. Like,
right.
That is not what was in there.
Right.
They're not going to fool me on that one.
Yeah, that looked totally different than what was in there from that weird party they were having. The seance, the dinner party, the one thing I wanted to say, kind of from a technical standpoint, geeking out over the cinematography, man, was the lighting cool. They just did such a wonderful job kind of giving it this mix of a modern horror film and classic noir lighting, just them little splashes of light on the faces and highlighting eyes or whatever it might be. And I was loving that whole scene when it came to the lighting alone. As a photo nerd, it just really, really got me. I was like, oh man, this is so cool. But let's tackle this seance. I don't even know where to start with it because we'll kind of treat it as its own point here. This thing was another example of this show ending on just a crazy good, like, I need to watch the next episode cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But that seance was so creepy in the sense where it went from, like, this story up to this point has been, there's creepy elements. It's kind of mystery. What's going on exactly? Into straight up horror territory where, oh, whoa, something bad is happening here.
Yeah, and like the, I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, when you were talking about, just circle back to the cinematography and the lighting.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted, like, when they cut to Dan watching.
Yep.
But like you just see Dan, like up close on his face.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, like, you can see the reflection in his eyes, like crystal clear of the lights on the monitor and stuff.
Yep.
And just seeing him realize that, you know, that these dreams, like, these are on tape. Like, she is repeating things that I said to Millet. Like,
right.
And just seeing his face, just the subtle change, like,
right.
It's just that, like,
I don't
would
know.
Not have been easy to act through.
Like, no, and that's what I was gonna say. I'm not sure who the actor is. I'm looking right now. I don't know how to pronounce it. Mamoudou. And the last name is Athie. Mamoudou Athi. I'm not sure.
I want to say Mamoudou.
Mamoudou Athi.
I'm pretty sure I used to work with a guy whose name was Mamoudou, but I think it was spelled differently. But
yeah, and I don't. I apologize for butchering that, but this guy, I mean, yes, he's got speaking lines and everything else, but the acting he's doing to sell this character and the emotional roller coaster he's on with nothing more than his eyes and facial expression, he's killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it, like, I don't think he has that much dialogue for how much time he has on screen. So,
and when he does talk, like, to Melody, he's very reserved. Like, he lets her do most of the talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. Now that seance, obviously, we get it starting out and they're pressuring Beatrice, you know, not Beatrice, what's the daughter's name? Eva or something?
Eve?
Crest, yeah. Like the daughter of the filmmaker, and they get her to reach out through the seance and talk to her deceased father. And that gets a little startling at the end because he tells her to basically stay away or something along those lines. And then they pressure Melody into searching for her mother, Julia. And at first she's relieved because the medium cannot make a connection until she, what is it? When she goes to hand the ring back or something?
No, I think she's handing the ring back and Melody grabs it.
Yeah.
And so when they're both touching the ring.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, she's sucked into this thing, and she's basically repeating verbatim the conversation that Dan and Melody had just minutes later in the episode, or minutes earlier in the episode, I should say. And that's when he has this big realization that, look, she might still be alive. I can save her because this is actually happening. And that, to me, that connection reveal was very cool. But then things really go off the rails because she basically starts clawing her face off, Beatrice, that is. And, like, we're seeing the first example in this series where it goes into the, I guess, body horror territory where she's, like, mutilating herself and there's lots of blood and, you know, all of this stuff. And I was like, holy cow, we're going there. All right. So.
Yeah. And, like, that's happening. And I thought for sure that that's where it was going to cut to black, episode over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had no idea how long I had been watching. Like,
right.
But it just seemed like the episode just kind of built and built and built and then got to there. And it's like, okay, it's done.
Yep.
But it's not. And there's more after that. So,
right.
But man, see that happen. And Melody, like, who is, I think for the most part, she's been pretty, like, calm and reserved.
Right.
With everything that's happening, you know.
Yep.
But then see her, like, finally start losing a little bit. Like, hey, wait, right. Come back. How'd you know all this? Don't take her away in this ambulance, please.
Right. She's kind of, like, beside herself, rightfully so, I mean, given what she just saw. But she doesn't seem disturbed by what she just saw. She seems like, what's happening? Tell me more, you know?
Yeah, I don't care about your face. Tell me what's right. happening.
That was crazy. And then, of course, it jumps back to her apartment with her roommate, as an Annabelle, right? Yeah,
yep.
Annabelle. Yep. And she's got this special paint that creepy red hair Cassandra gave her earlier that's, you know, supposed to have some kind of mystic qualities or whatever. And she has been just obsessed through this whole dinner party, like painting these crazy scribbly looking paintings and, you know, exclaiming, you know, telling Melody there's somebody in there. And all of the paintings, you can see they're all kind of scribbly and in that kind of style, but there's outlines of faces you can kind of faintly see. And I don't know who that's supposed to be.
I don't either. Cause like some of them, you can more make out a face than others.
Right.
But because it's similar to like the scribbles that Jess and Melody did.
Yes.
Like when they were getting sucked into whatever.
Right.
But this seems like it's a totally different situation. Like she's not saying, like she's seeing a person and she needs to get the person out of wherever they are.
Right. And I looked at that and I almost wondered, was she trying to paint Danny's face or Dan's face because he's like connecting through time or whatever is happening there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's right either, because we also see in the static again at the end, very end, our creepy monster demon face is back in the static. And then that's the episode cut.
Yeah.
And so there's something going on, but what exactly, I don't know, but yeah, this was a wild ride. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was very interesting how they were connecting through most of it and these moments of, you know, dialogue that were happening between Melody and Dan. But I was feeling for a little while, they're like, okay, where is this all going? Nothing much is happening, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of builds to this insane dinner party and seance and all of that. and it hits you with twice as much going on. And it's like, holy cow.
Yeah. That like once that dinner party kicked in.
Right.
Like, I don't know how much of the episode that was, but it felt like it went, bloop, now it's done.
Right. If I had to guess, it was probably the last 10 to 15 minutes, roughly, of the hour-long episode. And it felt like about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But so much, it just, I don't know what it was. The music, I don't know if you caught that, it had this really kind of old-timey music that was playing because it was supposed to be coming through the, you know, record player she had put on.
Yep.
But it also had a kind of discordant sound to it, so it was like the notes were a little off, and it was odd. And the whole atmosphere, the lighting, everything, the way it went, just it felt like it just pulled you right into that. And no matter where you were at before that, it's like you were fully paying attention in that stretch there.
Yeah, I think overall so far, like mm-hmm. the music and just sound design of all the episodes has been pretty spot on. Like it's subtle, but it works. Like it's very good at setting the tone.
Exactly. I think it actually is playing a much bigger part than we realize too, because so much of this story has revolved around little bits of sound, you know, be it mm-hmm. the song that he was playing on a piano with his sister that he then heard, you know, wherever else it was, in that cult meeting, maybe, I forget where it was. Yeah. When they were humming, it was the same melody.
Yeah.
And, now we've got the sound in this one. And so, yeah, it definitely plays a bigger role than I think we realize, but it's, I don't know. So far, I don't know if this is my favorite episode so far, but it's got to be up there. Granted, we're about halfway through now, so we'll see.
Yeah. I felt like episode 3 was a little bit of a dip. But yep. This one just went right back up there.
Right. It's like a little breath before we sprinted to the end here. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I wanted to mention, just touch on.
Yeah, yeah.
you said that Annabelle, you know, was supposed to go to the dinner party and didn't show up. And I totally forgot that she was supposed to be there. Like, Melody says that she'll be there, you know, in a little bit.
Yep.
And then I appreciate that they didn't go back to that to remind you that she should be there.
Right.
They let you forget that she was going to be there.
Right.
So that you can be even more surprised at why she wasn't there.
Right. Yeah, that's...
That was a nice touch that, you know, they're not going out of their way to say, hey, why isn't Melody here?
Like, right.
Or well, Annabelle.
And by and large, they're doing that. The series is definitely not taking the "we need to hold your hand through every step of the way" approach.
Yeah,
you know, it's leaving things like that room to breathe so that you can be surprised with the story, you know, and not have it, you know, like you said, it's like sometimes these shows and series like that, they feel the need to constantly remind you what's happening. So it reminds me of like, you know, mystery or horror movies for dummies or something where they got to remind you that remember this, wink, wink, you're supposed to notice this, you know, this one's, there's all kinds of stuff happening, little details, everything else. And you have no idea what's going to be important. So it's like, it makes you really invested in paying attention again.
Yeah.
The one thing, not to go too deep into it, but what did you think of the return of Virgil in his conversation with Dan's friend Mark? Is it Mark? Yeah, Mark.
Yeah. I think he is 100%. I think he was just there to make sure Mark knew that he, being Virgil, knew that he was talking to Dan.
Right.
Like, he'll get help or he'll act like he's going to help Dan if Mark calls him and says, hey, I think Dan needs help, which I think is going to happen after the conversation he had after he got Virgil's card.
Right.
But yeah, that he was just there to make sure that Mark was aware that he's being watched.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of that goes to what we talked about before where I think it was episode 2 where I can't remember if it was you or I that mentioned how it feels like Virgil's setting this whole scene to make sure that no one's going to believe a word Dan says and are going to think he just lost his mind.
Yep.
And I think we're seeing that with after that conversation, then when Dan calls and tells Mark, it's real, I can save her, there might be a chance, and that's when the camera pans down to him kind of reaching towards the card a little bit. And yeah, he's a pretty sinister dude, but I don't think he's the evil.
No, I think he's just like sinister, but not evil. He's not fully like across that line yet.
Right. Right.
And so, I think he has no idea what he's actually getting into.
That's kind of the feeling I have. Like he's the guy that thinks he's the big bad right now. And he's going to find out at some point that, oh, wait, I was just another pawn in something much larger. Yeah. That's the way it feels at this point anyways. What do you have in terms of any sort of predictions, if anything?
I didn't note anything for a prediction because I don't know. Like once it got to
there's just so much
seance, like I stopped. I was like, I was just 100%. paying complete attention to what was happening. And I didn't even think about what could be happening from that.
So. Right. And there's just so much that it could be. I think my biggest one is still kind of wondering what the significance, if anything, of Melody's ring might be. That and possibly even that pendant that Cassandra is letting Jess wear, that creepy black-faced pendant that Melody stares into and has the jittery demon looking face happen.
I don't know if it's, I think it's foreshadowed enough that I don't know if it counts as a full prediction.
Sure.
But something's definitely going to happen with that comet.
Yeah.
Cause the,
That's right. The comet.
The comet, like Jess wants to watch with the new telescope that Samuel got her.
Mm-hmm.
And like Samuel's still fishy. So I think there's some other motive that he's given her a telescope to check out this comet.
Well, and if he's working with Cassandra, maybe that pendant plays into it, and that's how Jess disappears.
Didn't they say the pendant was like
some Karenite? Magical something? It was from a comet.
They said, but they said it's from a comet, and I want to say she called it like Karenite or something like that. And the comet that they're talking about is Charon. So
okay,
like I think this comet's coming back around.
Yeah.
They're getting ready to do some ritual. Like,
right.
Come on, people.
Right, right. That one, yeah.
I would move out. Yeah. Move out. Go live in the woods for a couple of years.
No doubt. What did you have as far as either a favorite or eye roll moment of this episode?
So I know we've talked a lot about the seance, and that was a very cool scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually put down for my favorite part of this episode mm-hmm. is I think it was maybe the second time that Dan and Melody were interacting.
Okay.
And I think it was just because it was nice to see like their characters connect when Dan finds that the new bedroom.
With the journals.
With the journals. Yeah.
Okay.
And you hear about the tapes.
Right.
The tape Dan's dad had made for him.
Yeah.
And it's when she first learns that he's her therapist's son.
Right.
And I just thought for these two characters that are like totally separate lives,
mm-hmm.
I've only like kind of interacted like for a little bit. You actually saw them have a full on like conversation.
Right.
And I think it's like the most dialogue we've really seen from Dan.
Right.
Build more of that, like, because we've seen plenty of his backstory, but to actually build that in, give context to some of
right.
what he's doing.
Exactly. Yep. I did have the seance and the ending and the paintings with Annabelle and stuff. That was probably my favorite part. But when you mentioned the conversations, I think the dialogue moment with Dan and Melody that I really enjoyed, even though the one you're talking about has a lot of I don't mean to make this sound weird, but like a lot more of it, like a gentle emotional character driven moment that was really, really well done. I agree 100% with you there. The dialogue moment I like the most is when he tells her he's dead, because he's remembering his sister saying, "You don't have to be afraid of ghosts. They're just yeah. lost," you know, and he has to break the news to Melody that you're dead. You died in a fire, and you know, I didn't steal your stuff, you know, all that stuff. So
mm-hmm.
that to me was also very, very impactful, which ends up being a lot of what was repeated in the seance through right. through the medium. But yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. I think like this episode was pretty solid from start to finish. Like
yeah.
it wasn't like the seance obviously went quick. Like there was a lot happening.
Right.
But I think overall, just technically it was a really good episode.
Yeah. Very, very solid, especially for, you know, four episodes in kind of the middle point of the season. Like you said, episode 3 was a little bit of a dip. It was still good, but this really just kind of brought things to a whole new level. I'm looking forward to see what episode 5 brings, which that's called Through the Looking Glass. And I don't know what's going to happen there, but I'm just looking at the description, you know, which they don't tell you much. It says, "The past blurs into the present when Melody visits a forbidden floor in search of an inspired Annabelle. Music leads to lost souls and revelations." So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not quite sure what that all means. But looking at it, I'm super excited to get to it. The bad part is we've got to wait a few days because we're both tied up. It's going to be a few days till we can record again. For listeners, yeah. it's not going to matter. It's coming out week after week. So get caught up. But now we've got a long wait.
I know. I'm not excited about it.
Well, we can always watch it twice if we need to. So,
that's true.
You know, we've got that to fall back on. So I think that's the plan. Why don't we get out of here? I think I'm going to go watch episode 5 right away.
All right. I might too. We'll see.
All right, man. We'll see you next week with episode 5. And listeners, if you're enjoying it, reach out. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. So there you have it. That was episode 4 of Archive 81, number 5 for Beyond the Stream. Boy, these numbering systems are getting confusing. I might have to change that going forward. My apologies. But anyways, I wanted to give you guys just a real quick heads up. I didn't want to make a big deal about it, but for those of you that are keeping track, just a little milestone we hit today. This episode is episode 200 of the AIC Stories podcast. It's been quite a journey and a lot of fun, a lot of work, and a lot of good times, good stories, So much fun. So much that I can't even put into words, really. And I just want to say a sincere, heartfelt thank you to all of you that have joined me on this journey and continue to stick with me going forward, because as you know, I'm of the mindset to just keep trying things that I enjoy. If I have an idea, I'm going to put it out there for you guys and create the ever-changing and ever-growing audio archive. So woohoo, let's celebrate episode 200, and we'll see you guys next time.